Good morning, everyone. We are just two Sundays away from Election Day 2020. Early elections have already started, and out of an abundance of caution, due to the threats about voter intimidation or post office malfunction on the actual day, many of us have already submitted our ballots in the mail or at the yellow drop boxes throughout our cities. Now, every presidential election seems to be a little more exciting because it feels like the race to the White House is a race that carries with it a lot of cultural weight, something that we've talked about a lot in the past few weeks. But this year feels a little different. With the pandemic and 220 deaths and 8 million cases of COVID-19 in the U.S. alone, with racial tensions at the breaking point, a divisive and tense campaign season, with natural disasters and the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, with domestic terror plots to kidnap an American governor, voter fraud allegations, all this stuff, it feels like Halloween came a little bit early. And we may have noticed in this time a rise in fear and anxiety in our national countenance. And I think we can understand why. All this stuff has been building up, and it feels like we're nearing a breaking point as a culture and a society. I mean, everyone's angry. Everyone's frustrated. Everyone's fed up for a lot of different reasons. And at this point, it's like everything that gets said is just so triggering and incendiary. It's come to a point where it will be very interesting, to say the least, what actually happens after the election. There's going to be a reaction. We just don't know exactly what it's going to be. We can pretty much bet, though, that nobody's going to be lining up to give each other high fives and tell each other good game. That kind of good sportsmanship that we have to practice as kids when we play soccer or baseball, that's just not a part of our culture right now. Now, there's already a lot at stake in this election. But now we've also become so divided as a people, and our identities have just become so entrenched on the particular sides that we have here. And in some ways, it feels like the right and the left, they're just part of two different countries, because it feels like the value system that we used to share has now just become so divergent. As one article I read suggests, the country is already at a cold civil war, and we're just hoping and praying that it doesn't escalate any further. I mean, how many of us have wondered, where am I? Is this really the United States of America? Are there really armed militia groups that want to execute a U.S. governor? Is the integrity of our voting system really being questioned? Why is it hard to commit to a peaceful transfer of power? Why can't we have a presidential debate that's civil? And all this has gotten me interested and concerned about the next couple months. This season that goes from the election to the inauguration. To be frank, I'm concerned about what our leaders will say and do, and I'm concerned about how people will react. I've been discussing this with my mentors and with pastor groups that I'm a part of, and even with my therapist. And I've been praying for the culture and the nation regularly in anticipation for where I see the society going. Now, there's no way to predict the future. I don't know what's going to happen. My sense is that it will be somewhere in between the world ending and business as usual. Now, that's a pretty big margin of error, I know, but I don't think the world will end. But I also am pretty sure that the next few months will not be normal. There's a chance that we could see significant unrest and uprisings in our cities. There's a chance that we could see some pretty drastic political moves. There's a chance that we could see something worse. Again, we can't predict the future. But if this year has taught us anything, it's don't be surprised. Don't assume. Anything can happen. And so just as I have been trying to lead you through our LGBTQ journey and lead you through this time of pandemic, I want to lead you through this unprecedented election season. I think this is a historic moment. Another one. 30 years from now, kids are going to be learning about this political period in their social studies classes. Hopefully at that time they'll be meeting in person. But the thing with historic moments is that you want to be part of the good ones, but you don't want to be a part of the bad ones. But what happens when history takes a sharp turn for the worst? What do the people of God do in really difficult moments in history? What does God do? As your senior pastor, I want to lead us to consider these questions. What does God call us to do when our world crumbles? When it feels like this is an hour when darkness reigns? In the Bible, as Jesus makes his journey to the cross at the end of his earthly ministry, he and his disciples are gathering for a Passover meal where, you may remember, he talks in kind of cryptic language about his coming betrayal and death. And then after the meal, Jesus and the disciples, they head out to the Mount of Olives just outside the city of Jerusalem, at the foot of which lies the Garden of Gethsemane, a place full of twisted old olive trees. And this group settles down there for the late hours. Now imagine what that would have been like. Imagine what it would have felt like. Jesus and his disciples, well, their whole journey has led up to this point. He's traveled from the backwater area of Galilee to the cultural, religious, and political center for his people here in Jerusalem. He enters Jerusalem not far from where they are now, by the Mount of Olives, and at that point his followers are shouting, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." You can see the type of expectation that has built up. He teaches at the temple every day and even confronts the sellers there, starts making all these prophetic statements about the destruction of the temple. He makes a few statements also about his own betrayal, his own purpose being fulfilled, and this message of preparation that he gives to his closest followers. Grab a purse, a bag, and even a sword. And if you're one of the disciples watching all this happen, listening to all this, the tension for you is building. See, before Jesus had told you to go out, take nothing, he said. And now he wants you to take a bag, grab some money, and get a weapon? I mean, what's going to happen? Is there going to be a battle? Is there going to be a revolution? Are they going to take the government, the temple? Are they going to have to flee? And what's going to happen to Jesus? What's going to happen to us? And why is Jesus so concerned? I mean, this is a guy who slept through a storm that almost killed all of you. But this moment is making him worried. You see, history is about to get dark, and not even Jesus really understands what's about to unfold. It's the immense tension of the Gethsemane scene that speaks to where we find ourselves right now. And so for the next couple of weeks, I want to use this story in Luke 22 to understand our temptations, what our temptations might be in these moments, but also to see how Jesus responds and leads as he personally describes this hour as an hour when darkness reigns. And so let's read the first part of this passage together. Luke chapter 22, starting at verse 39, says, "Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, 'Pray that you will not fall into temptation.' He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, 'Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done.' An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. 'Why are you sleeping?' he asked them. 'Get up and pray, so that you will not fall into temptation.'" This passage is so full of emotional content. I mean, we watch Jesus' posture and the physical manifestations of his feelings, anguish that leads to sweat dropping like blood to the ground. Jesus definitely understands the intensity of this moment. But then, so do his disciples. When Jesus comes back from praying, he finds the disciples asleep. Now, Matthew's gospel recalls this happening three times, that Jesus keeps telling his disciples to stay awake and keep watch, and then he leaves to pray, and then he comes back, and they're asleep. And he does that three times. And so my automatic thought when I read this passage and story is think, man, these disciples are lazy. They can't even stay awake for an hour, as Matthew's gospel recalls it. And I start thinking, Jesus, you sure picked the wrong bunch of people to be by your right hand. But then Luke adds this really important detail. In verse 45, he says the disciples were asleep, exhausted from sorrow. Exhausted from sorrow. So maybe it wasn't that the disciples were clueless and lazy about what was happening. Maybe they actually did have a sense of the gravity of the situation. You see, that little clue that Luke gives tells us that the disciples, even if they did not know exactly what was going to happen, they sensed something. They sensed that this was a bad turning point in history. And they were disturbed, anxious, depressed, and I think maybe even a little scared. And so they fall asleep. They take a nap. Have you ever been so troubled or sad that all you want to do is go to sleep? You feel lethargic. Maybe your body just wants to run away from whatever problem you're dealing with. I mean, I think all of us can understand what that feels like. That's often what I do. Some of us, that's how our bodies are responding even to this pandemic, right? I think that's one of our temptations in these tense moments of history. To hide or tune out or deny what's going on. In a way, we take a nap from reality and go to sleep. And I even think that that's sometimes what Christians do. They take a nap from reality, but they use their spirituality to cover it. It's easy. I've done it at times. In this moment, we could just be talking about the importance of a personal devotional life with God, right? At this moment in 2020, that's what we're talking about. But while I do believe that talking about a personal faith is important and a devotional life, it would just feel like if that's all we're talking about, then we'd be going to sleep from this moment in history. We'd be hiding behind our religion when Christ actually calls us to be awake, to be aware. And so what is the first thing that Jesus does when human history is headed toward an immensely tragic season? He doesn't take a nap. He goes to pray. And he calls his people to pray with him. With all the uncertainty and doubt and fear and sorrow that Jesus himself is holding, Jesus goes to the Father and surrenders to God. And then Jesus calls his followers to pray too. Pray that you will not fall into temptation. And what was that temptation? The temptation was to fall asleep in this moment. To be in denial, to be in hiding, to be disconnected from the darkness of this hour. Jesus says, no, your job is actually to stand in the middle of the darkness and pray. See, it's the church's job to pray for the world. It's us who are called to intercede on humanity's behalf. It's our call to pray for the people of this land. Because if we're not praying for the Lord of hosts, to the Lord of hosts on behalf of our people, then who will? Only we can do that. Only us. And so I invite you to pray in this season. God will hear you. He'll hear you. You're his children. Pray for justice and healing and reconciliation and the movement of God's Spirit. Pray for our people. Pray for our leaders. Pray that the church can be light when it feels like darkness reigns.